This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to Free Left Turn, a left-wing perspective here on 89.0 Independent Community Media. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Top of the morning to you.
Oh, good morning, morning, gentlemen.
Yes.
I'm just practicing being a Tory in case we get defeated.
Well, first of all, you need to stick a plum in your mouth.
That's right. But I have got a check.
Somewhere after
you. I have got a check shirt when I go and visit certain members of my family, you know. So
blue.
Blue and checkered, you know.
Yes.
When the fight's not over yet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The revolution starts now. Oh, no. Well.
Yeah.
Or so they say. Mm. There's been plenty going on, and I thought I would start off with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who should fund the ambulance service? The state or sausage sizzles?
The state, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they do get some government support.
They get a lot of government support anyway. Yeah,
but should it really be? Should it be part of the wider Te Whatu Ora and come under the health arm because of what they do?
What's risen up? Is this just
no? There was an article, okay, or it was an email that I received. It's from the CTU, Combined Trade Unions, and. The issue was that they got some funding from the budget.
Yep, which they do, yeah.
Yeah, and what the concern is the ageing population and people in the ambulance service currently going to Australia for because it's greener grasses. The grass is green over there.
Sorry, say it again?
The grass is green over in Australia. Yeah, sorry.
So emergency services are creaking.
Yeah. They're saying there's a part here. The ageing population is driving demand through the roof. So that's the demand for ambulances.
Yeah. Because at the moment you've got part charges, haven't you? If I call an ambulance, I have to pay $100.
Yeah. So.
Whereas before, I'm talking some of you, it used to be free. Free ambulance service.
And you can get a membership, to be fair.
Yeah,
and
you
then
can.
Give you so many
but
free.
It's no longer totally free. You could have to subscribe to it or pay for it directly.
Yeah.
Because their budgets have been trimmed back over the years.
Yeah, so they're saying in
Have they been trimmed back or they just haven't kept pace with the increase in population?
Yeah, this is what they're saying. This is
probably both. I remember budgets being cut some years ago. There was talk of financial restraints and that. So the ambulance service were forced to charge people for the use of an ambulance or become a member and get like a subsidy.
What does the CTU say, Craig?
No, it's basically saying this about the ageing population. The over 65 population will double by 2065, pushing ambulance call-outs by up 61%. So it's a projection.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The total annual cost of running our ambulance services is projected to grow from $508 million today to nearly $2 billion by 2065. The service will cross the $1 billion mark for the first time by 2045, another projection.
Mm.
And the charitable giving will cover an ever smaller fraction of that.
Yeah.
Well, this is following in line with what's happened with the Fire Brigade.
Yeah.
They're having sort of financial constraints. And
apart from the Fire Brigade is a completely government-funded thing. Apart from this volunteer sector.
But
you know what I mean? St John's still runs as as a board, etc. But it's
a charity, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can give, if you can donate St John's, that's why often you see, and it could occur to them, they're wealthy people and they donate ambulances.
Mm-hmm.
You often see on the side of an ambulance.
Oh, this has been brought to you by
the Smith family you know. And that's a credit to them, but it is off their tax. To be fair,
the other
so we've actually paid for it.
Well, we've helped them subsidise.
Well, through our taxes, we've subsidised it.
Well, they just haven't paid. Instead of paying some tax, they've bought an ambulance. So you can argue that one.
And then they've claimed it.
Yeah.
The other parts to this are our ambulance officers are being paid to leave.
What?
Any New Zealand ambulance officer would be 17% to 33% better off the moment they cross the Tasman.
Okay, they're not paid to leave, but it's an incentive for them.
Training a registered paramedic costs the public nearly $150,000, and when they go to Australia, that investment goes with them.
That applies for a policeman and fireman.
Every 1% increase in attrition costs the system roughly $5 million a year. So they lose that amount.
Mm. And then need to spend more to try and make up the shortfall.
Yeah, so
it becomes a vicious cycle.
So the next part of it is the charitable model is collapsing just when we need it most.
Yeah.
They're not getting as much money through charity. So that's why the sausage sizzle comment was made. Yeah.
And they always have relied on people donating. And you often see it, you have an emergency or something and people donate, to St John's or something as a thank you for what they've done. But, you know, that might be, as people, the ageing population, maybe it's not happening as much amongst the younger ones.
Yeah. And the last point was the fuel crisis has made a long-term problem urgent. Our entire ambulance fleet runs on diesel.
Right.
After the 2026 fuel crisis, diesel prices have nearly doubled. So electrifying the fleet would save money in the long run, but the $259 to $300 million upfront cost is simply impossible for a charity to raise.
Yes.
Only the Crown can do that.
So if you've got a sick relation, you really should have a 5-litre or 10-litre jerry can of diesel beside them.
That's what it sounds like.
Say, I've got diesel.
So that's what came through an email. But there is also a document there as well, and I haven't got it here because it's an attachment. So it's called Emergency Saving the New Zealand Ambulance Service, and it's a report. It's quite a big report.
Yeah, and let's face it, it has been a debate for years as we've gone from a charity, St John's, with a little bit of state help, population's grown, etc., and now St John's is still a charity and it's still private, but basically it's also a quasi-state funded organisation.
I think we're behind the eight ball compared to other countries who fund it more through the state.
Yeah.
That's coming under question.
I can't remember. I did actually, I won't quote it, but I did actually look of how much funding the state gives, and it's a big chunk of St John's budget.
But as this situation progresses,
yeah,
is there any guarantee that funding
is going to be saying,
at that level?
That's what they're saying. It's diminishing, diminishing charitable side of it.
So what happens when it runs out?
Does your subscriptions go up? And all that
They'll have to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, the argument is the state has a responsibility to get people to hospital if they need to go.
Should be the wider part of the Ministry of Health.
It's socialism. It's that collective responsibility.
Or we head in the direction of America.
Yeah. You got any money? Oh, no, we're not coming. I don't know how it works in America.
We know that in Australia and in the British Isles, it's covered a lot largely by the state, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it should be.
Again, on these economic constraints, how long can that continue?
Well, I think it will continue.
At that level, though.
Oh, I think it still will continue because...
but it's the level, though. That's why I'm questioning.
Yeah, but the ageing population...
That article just pointed out that they're struggling.
They're struggling in certain places, aren't they? Like they're struggling because of the ageing population. They're struggling around the retention of staff. They're struggling around the charity stuff.
And the fuel crisis. Yeah, well put. Yeah. But I say, I think it's one of those things when you look at a state, a society, people, I think all parties wouldn't push out and say, oh, we're not going to fund it. No, they won't. It's not a good look if Benny is, and there's already comments often that ambulance is too slow getting in certain things, etc. But you imagine if they say, well, we're not.
They're too slow getting there because of the demand for those services has gone up.
I would say often it's that, but often it's also, don't forget they prioritise.
Well, they have to triage.
We see that in those English programs. They do that.
Which makes sense. You deal with a worst case scenario, and someone further down can wait a little bit longer. It doesn't bode well, though, does it?
No, not.
Well,
it also becomes like a lottery. Imagine if you're living out in the sticks and need an ambulance.
Yeah, it has to be an air ambulance, wouldn't it?
Well, often they are if they had a
that still has to be paid for.
Of course.
Yeah, that's another part.
You end up with a postcode lottery access to emergency services.
I think it'll continue, but it'll be a bigger chunk of the state budget.
It should be.
But will they cough up?
Well, the state will, but I say it'll have to come from somewhere.
You have more faith in the system than I do.
Yeah, no, I do.
Given the current persuade, I don't have much faith in them.
Yeah, no, I'm still.
I think we're both. I'm talking about the degree and the level of financial support.
That's where
I have a difficulty with these people who can do something about it, see it our way.
I just think because it's you look at America, they still get the ambulances to the shooting scheme. Then they have arguments who's going to pay for it in the hospital, but the ambulance pick up the people. And I think any state, all parties are going to still do that. I would think.
Yeah, but I have my doubts because of the aging population.
One of the factors. Oh, we'll find out as it unfolds, I guess.
Yeah, say it's 50 years ago, if you're elderly, you can get an ambulance, that was more or less on your door within.
Yeah. This has been ongoing, these reports.
This is for a number of years. This is not recent,
this is decades.
And I think the ageing population, they started with that one, and it's always been projected that we'd have an ageing population.
And don't forget, there's also probably a bit of lobbying in there, because it's still a semi-private, a charitable business, they are still going to the government saying, we want to keep us doing this, we need some money, you know?
I think sometimes rugby games or football games to have St John's ambulance.
They used to.
Those grounds or those clubs
sponsor the
ambulance crew that stand there in case of an emergency?
I don't know. They may well do. I'm not sure.
Well, they should do.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
If the ambulance service is struggling financially and demographically.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know enough about that one, but I do remember that. I don't tend to go to sports on Saturday anymore, but they used to regularly see someone there with a first aid officer, at St John's.
On the sidelines waiting for...
Good point.
Yeah, you used to see the old rugby games. In days when it was amateur, there used to be the old officer around there. Somebody got injured and then they'd be taken off.
But they'd be in uniform. They could well have been volunteers. Just because you were in a uniform, St John's still has volunteers that we
need. Yeah, of course. I
believe, yeah.
It's a tricky one, though, isn't it?
It was a good one because it came up through the email. So what have you got there, Mick? We'll go with you.
Well, it's more doom and gloom, I'm afraid. I've been struggling to... here we go. This is the Willis Public Service cuts set to save 2.4 billion. Labour ejects ministers' claims frontline roles will be spared. The government expects to save 2.4 billion overhauling the public service, including reducing the number of departments, increasing artificial intelligence use, which doesn't fill me with confidence, and cutting public servants by nearly 9,000.
They
reckon it's top heavy. She said this was the historical norm, was an increase under Labour. The public service currently equates to 1.2% of the population. In numerical terms, it rose from about 48,000. When Labour took office in 2017 to 63,000 last December.
Yeah.
But what's our population grown by in that same time?
Let's
put it in perspective of what of population growth and services.
She's saying she wants a track in progress towards a numerical target of no more than 55,000 full-time equivalent public servants by July 2029.
Yeah, they talk about 1% of the population.
Yeah, which is about 8,700 fewer than was this time, December last year. But he's gone to great deals to stress that these targets apply to the core public service and do not include teachers, nurses, doctors, police, or people employed by Crown entities. We will fully expect that with good budgeting, we will be able to hire more nurses, police officers, and others in critical frontline roles.
Well, their budgeting hasn't been questioned.
But who's going to be... It's all very well having the doctor or the fireman, but someone actually has to do the clerical stuff. Someone actually has to keep the file. Someone actually has to make sure the door opens so they can get out the door.
Someone has to clean up the mess on the floor.
They talk about AI could do
some of that. It doesn't fill me, this idea that AI solves all problems, does not fill me with confidence.
And it's a standard electioneering, you know, we've got too many civil servants. Really, it should be, like all things, it's okay. Do we get value for money out of our civil service, and are we an efficient civil service?
That argument's been raging for decades, centuries.
Yeah,
but it's not new, but it's been hijacked by certain individuals who shall remain nameless.
Yeah, and it's election time, and there's that minimal government thing. But if you see what minimal government does, they're usually a disaster. But they tend to be all right for the wealthy because they have private medical insurance, they have secure beach houses, lake houses, and live in protected suburbs.
And those sort of people, they feel they've been disadvantaged and will take umbrage and do something about it. Whereas the people who are at the bottom of the heap don't have those resources. Yeah.
And the people at the bottom of the heap, we do need, I'm not at the bottom of the heap, fortunately, but people at the bottom of the heap really, really do need a strong civil service. And they're the ones, unfortunately, when they do these cuts, it won't be the cut on the road from North Shore to somewhere. They won't cut the how they get people or services to nice beach areas. It'll be in poor areas that the cuts will happen.
It'll be the same people affected.
Because minimal government, as you're right, is a disaster.
And so it's especially a disaster for the struggling.
Well, carrying on in that vein, then social housing, this was yesterday's paper, social housing tenants to pay more, do more. Some households will be about $24 a week worse off, others better off. This is all part of Mr. Housing Minister, Mr. Bishop, who's exploring further changes to get people out of social housing, including defined tenancy durations. And so, as I say, social housing tenants will pay higher rents from April 27 next year as Cabinet mulls tougher rules relating to tenancy durations of responsibility. This is all about gerrymandering and nursing the figures to reduce people who require social housing. And it's a significant reset that will leave 129,000 households worse off by an average of $24 per week. Although Bishop has made the case that people who can afford to rent privately are incentivized to stay in the public system, while those who need help the most are missing out, which is true, but I rather think he's exploiting that that scenario.
Because most people in social housing are there for a reason.
Medical, all sorts of problems, and they
get in there because their credit is poor.
Yeah,
they're on a low income of some form.
Yeah,
and as you said, Mick,
disability. Yep.
Disability.
Yeah,
they may have all three of those issues.
And there are some. There are some that you start off and you're not doing very well and you happen to land on your feet or get a job
but
and you're doing
improve.
All right and things improve.
And they,
But that would be, I wouldn't say that would be the majority.
But he's not exactly, I just don't associate altruism with this guy. Or any humanity at all. It's about money. I'm talking about money. Kiwis to be kept in dark on road costs. Ombudsman agrees details to stay under wraps on what could be country's most expensive new highway. This is the one that goes to the first section of the Northern Corridor, which goes from...
Oh, this is the holiday highway.
Walkworth to Tehana.
Yeah.
And Conan Sharp of the transport blog Greater Auckland asked the Ministry of Transport and NZTA to release what he said was a reasonable range of costs. He wasn't after specifics, but he just wanted a ballpoint figure. And both agencies declined under the citing commercial sensitivities.
The holiday highway.
Okay, we're increasing population. We need roads, and we don't seem to want to go down the public transport rail, etc. So yeah,
I mean, in New Zealand, I think they worked out it was $12 million per kilometre tunnel.
Okay,
so be about the same for section kilometre of road.
That's expensive building up north. Look at the holiday highway to up to John Key's Batch, etc. That
Matakana, you mean?
You know, it's had to go through a lot of hills and gullies and all that.
So it's not going to be cheap.
No, it's not sort of going across a gravel plain like Australia.
No.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But, and okay, they've got contractors and all that. But, you know, I think the thing that's missing is the population needs to be aware that, because, okay, we get there's petrol tax, you know, fuel taxes, etc.
Covers a part of it.
It should be always open knowledge.
But this guy was only asking, he wasn't asking for specific number. He just wanted a ballpark.
Yeah, what sort of money are we going to spend?
Roundabout, you know, idea. But they wouldn't even do that.
Yeah.
Under the Official Information Act.
Yeah, they're good at hiding stuff.
Yeah, which makes you suspicious that it could balloon out of all control.
Yeah,
well, you want to be reassured as a citizen is that there's no sort of wink wink nudge nudge deals going on.
And it comes back to
say no more.
Does it come back to those big donors again? Is it?
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's some big roadworks firms, etc.
We're supposed to trust these people that they know what they're doing. And they've got our best interest at heart.
Well, and the civil service that give them out. You know, when there's big money involved, you want to know that's a robust system. And there's competition and that there's checks and balances.
I think we've been demanding a robust system for some time, and it's found wanting.
Yes, because democracy has sort of been eroded around. They've gone around it.
Yeah.
Where they're fast-tracking stuff, which I think they would be part of, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. There comes multitudes in. Any sort of glitches? Who's accountable? Nothing to see here.
Well,
we'll throw some medium level bureaucrat in under the bus to take the blame.
But you imagine, and I don't know the percentages, but roading costs in New Zealand must be a huge chunk of civil budgets.
Well, that's why I'm sort of equating a kilometre of tunnel was about $12 million.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking the same distance on the road, given the terrain, you wouldn't get much change out of $12 million. I mean, it could be a little less, it could be a little bit more, but, you know, it's going to be expensive.
There should be a comparison between what's the cost of a kilometre of rail versus a kilometre of road versus a kilometre of tunnel.
Yeah, and the maintenance.
Yeah,
it's like we're talking about before, earlier, going over to Tauranga, the road is busy. We've got a tunnel would be a lot. If we had passenger services through, it may be even another rail tunnel. But otherwise, how much do we spend each year maintaining the Hamilton to Tauranga
and a certain lobby group? And a certain lobby group is rubbing their hands with glee, thinking, okay, happy days are here, because they're going to get the contracts to either build the roads in the first place or repair them.
Yeah.
Sounds like, as you said before, Nick, a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Scenario. Yes.
Well, I don't know, but
I don't know.
He's desperate to stay trusted.
Yeah, I do. We're a high trust society, which is
eroding.
Of course, it is. Yeah.
When we talk about things like under urgency and fast track,
which covers a multitude of sins.
Yeah. But as a sort of my socialist sort of inner self thinks that, you know, we do need to try and keep a high trust society. You know,
Getting exceedingly hard.
Which is why you need a good strong civil service with more than enough people to do everything and not cut corners.
They've just knocked that out.
Yeah, well, that's the danger.
9,000 be there.
Let's do self-checking on our order team. Yeah, you can trust us on the fishing boats. You can trust us to dig a mine. We don't need any inspectors.
Don't need trade unions.
You mentioned something very interesting there. You mentioned fishing in there because that raised its head in the news this week about this thing around was it leisure fishing versus commercial fishing?
Yeah.
There's things. And I know that leisure fishing people are concerned about this upsurge in commercial fishing.
Well, and there's an awful lot of recreational fishers out there.
Yeah, but commercial fishing, they want us to do away with those cameras, don't they? There's nothing to see here, like you said before.
Self-regulating.
We've heard that before.
Self-regulating speed limits. You imagine that? On the highways, etc.
We heard about self-regulating when we talked about the... What was it? The broadcastings, broadcasting stuff. Yeah, self-regulating.
And the self-regulating the current measures to combat the fuel crisis.
The
population are going to study this and act on behalf of the greater good. Really? I don't think so.
Why do we have
regulations
in the first place?
Trust people.
And pressures of societies and all that.
You don't need
a regulation. I live on the house on my own. I can leave my toilet seat up or down because I'm on my own. But the moment you have five people in the house...
Yeah, then there becomes an issue.
You need to have a bit of sort of...
protest.
I wouldn't call it rules, but you need to have an understanding of toilet etiquette. So the same thing applies to a population. You have to have some more controls and restrictions.
And that, of course, generates toilet sense of humour.
You talked about a high trust thing, don't you? Yeah. High trust society.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit of a sceptic. Like Mick. I don't trust first and foremost.
So we've got positive Freddie and negative Nellies, haven't we?
Do you trust Bishop to do the right thing about with housing?
Do you trust any of them?
Mm-hmm. The answer is no.
Yeah.
I would like to.
Yeah.
Believe me, I would like to, but experience has taught me
that
you can't.
Well, that's also the same thing. We have these people who are politicians, but you need a strong civil service that functions. So even if you've got a wayward politician, the civil service is there to keep the system ticking over when
there's in between elections and the government's not actually sitting.
Yeah,
they keep the country running.
Of course. Yeah. You know,
but I'm sure it's going to. They said in that article that it's not going to impact on frontline services. I don't see that.
And so the road to cut the civil service goes down that road to minimal government.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And which is fine. And going back, minimal government works okay.
If everyone's on the same level.
And minimum government is okay. You know, people who are wealthy, they have their own medical insurance, they have their own cars, they have their own beach house, and everything works for them.
Yeah.
But people who are, the reality is the poorer you are, the chance that you'll have more health issues, you'll have other issues. You need a strong civil service.
Those things cost more money.
And we need and empathy from the ones above. So you shouldn't isolate
themselves.
The ones
above want minimum government because they don't want to pay taxes.
Yeah, they're too.
I don't know why they're because most of them don't pay. They choose what tax they pay anyway.
You'd think they were being bled.
You would think, but are they being bled?
No. They tell themselves, I've been covered in leeches, I've been sucked dry. But they don't want to pay taxes, but they want the rest of us to pay for their roads.
Didn't we find out in that report that Labour guy, the politician, they did a report on the wealth and how much tax they were paying. They were paying about 9.6% tax.
You're talking about David Parker.
They would have us believe that.
Yeah,
they've been hung, drawn, and quartered, and bled, and
I think the leeches are. We know who the leeches are.
The only other thing I got was Brexit wounds reopen because apparently Starmer's quite keen on regaining access to the European Union
through their stealth way. for the back door, so to speak.
At the cost of about £1 billion.
Yeah,
a year.
So we're going to leave.
Dealing, I think the areas was pharmaceuticals, chemicals, and munitions.
Yeah, so they're going to pay money so they can get access to the European Union.
Mm.
Doesn't that what the argument was about when they had the Brexit referendum?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they're really just shooting themselves.
Well, apparently Andy Burnham is quite keen to rejoin the union, but Reform and the Tories said, oh, no, we'll stay out.
So they can keep the immigrants out. And now, haven't they got a problem? They're out now and they've got this problem of migrants. So what's Brexit actually achieved, any of
well,
them?
Well, there's an expletive that comes to mind, and I'm sure people listening will probably guess what that
is. It even all?
All
start with F?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
The all word's quite prominent.
Yeah. So it's been an absolute cluster of fire trucks, this whole thing.
Yeah.
All that time, resources, money, all the line that went on, and it's really sucking head again.
Yeah.
They should never have joined the European Union back in the days of Edward Heath, or they should never have left after having joined.
Yeah. And isn't it the irony? There's so many ironies, etc. It's like, where do all the Brits go for holidays?
Europe.
Over to Europe. You know.
Benidorm.
When you're in the European Union, you could go from the UK to Europe. You didn't have to worry about visas and open borders. Yeah. Now, it's unbelievable that this has reared its head again.
Yeah, and meanwhile, of course, they're out, and unless you're in the elite classes in the UK, poor old Johnny Britt's doing very badly.
Well, very much
Ireland, Southern Ireland is still in the European, it's doing great.
Oh, they're still in.
Northern Ireland was still doing great because they came to that special border arrangement.
They got a border so they could drive the truck across.
All the countries at the time were doing really well.
Yeah. Whether that's still the case or not, I don't know, because, well, the car push is being put on because of the current energy crisis, fuel.
And we know, people might think, oh, we're talking for a hole in our head, but what gives us an indication that what we're talking about has some sense of some truth is we just look at the recent UK elections. Who did well out of that? So people are unhappy with how the country has been run.
And they're desperate for some change for the good.
Yeah.
But whether they're going to get it is another thing.
But have they... what I worry about, I have concern about or interest in, is how does Johnny Britt, that's voted for reform, going, yeah, it's those brownies that's the problem, do they get the connection that about the Brexit and the whole...
They're
still quite happy just listening to Nigel Farage blaming the brown people.
Because it's easy to they could cope with that.
Thinking about
Brexit and all the implications, it's just too much for their brain. They go for the easy option.
Hate. And it gets fed in by these people, politicians. Yeah.
And as we said before, the problem's not illegal immigrants, it's legal immigrants.
Well, the problem...
3 million from Ukraine, 2 million from Hong Kong.
But who does all the help? You know, migrants in the UK, we're not... All our countries, including New Zealand, we're not replacing ourselves. So we're relying on migrants for our workforce.
Yeah, that's what we do.
That's just the reality. You know, we can't say, we don't want them because we need them.
We need them.
You know? Yeah. And so the cost of that, of course, is the culture will change. Yeah. Because you bring in a new people... They bring in their culture. It's not their fault. That's how it is.
That's right.
And that's happened through history, through millennium.
Millennia, I should say.
It's just being manipulated by people in positions of power and influence.
Yeah.
For their own gain.
And the people that are manipulating are easy to manipulate.
Well, if you're uneducated, you're
vulnerable.
Yeah. There was a bit of a disclaimer to that. Sometimes I've met people who've got good professional jobs and they still scream out the window you think these people shouldn't be prejudiced or anything else because they're educated and they still have it. And you think
they bring their prejudice with them.
Unfortunately.
So
can we keep going on the UK? I see Andy Burnham has been given permission to stand.
What a cluster that was. I mean, Starmer really made a big mistake by saying no, you can't stand for Labour.
Yeah, in the Denton, the local election, the other election where the Green Lady won, and not Green Lady, but Lady who represents the Greens. What was her name? I can't remember now.
I know what you mean. Gone.
Yeah. But anyway, so he's been given permission to leave his mayoralty and stand as a.
I think an MP stepped aside and said, you could have my seat.
Yeah.
Was it the health one, was it?
No, not West Street, another guy.
Okay. Another guy.
Stepped aside and said, Nate.
Yeah.
You can stand for my seat.
And you have to get permission over there from the Executive Labour Committee, the National Executive Committee, NEC they call it. And he's been granted permission so he can do that and all that. So, okay, so he's going into this, this by-election, and he's probably still favoured to win, even with, there'll be a big effort from Reform and Restore's going to have a candidate, so there's going to be a scrap between the right wing and the right wing, and the Greens, so it'll be interesting. But he's got a quite a good reputation of more recent times of running the Birmingham city, and people say, oh, he's only a mayor. But don't forget, Birmingham, what's the population? You're an expert, mate. How many millions there? Bigger than New Zealand?
Oh.
Not quite, but a couple of million?
Maybe a million and a half, maybe.
Yeah, so it's as big as Auckland.
It's a big city.
And he inherited a mess because Greater Birmingham's council, they want the garbage people.
Oh,
They were bankrupt. So many million in debt.
So he's got a reputation of sort of sorting all that out.
So
he'll take that with him, and he's from, I can't remember the, I don't know, Markercroft? No idea where the area is. But he was there as a young person, as a child or something, and so he wouldn't be considered as an outsider.
Right.
So it's his to lose, I guess, but they'll have a good go, and it'll be interesting to see how Reform and Restore get on.
It'd be interesting to see the mud flying.
It'll
get dirty, I think.
Because you think Reform's bad. Restore's to the right of Reform.
Yeah.
And he's for detention. Like he's for he's for detention camps and all that sort of thing.
He wants detention camps in green areas.
Yeah, that was it. We'll put the people in the green areas. See how you like it.
Yeah. Start off as a joke, and they decide to make it policy. They want to put some illegals into camps.
You want to vote for the migrants, you have them. Yeah, sort
of.
If you
vote for Reform, there won't be a refugee centre in your constituent. It's just fear-mongering.
It's fear-mongering. It's scary stuff.
Real nasty.
Yeah, so that's to watch the space. So that must be going to happen. Because why it's sort of interesting or important from the UK perspective, if Andy Burnham gets elected as the MP, he can't challenge the Prime Minister unless you're an MP. So you can't be like in America, anyone can stand for president, which we saw, and we've got anyone in there now. And Trump was never a politician. He was a rock star, not a rock star.
Rockhead.
You know, he was on a TV star, basically, and a rich person, a lucky boy, as they call him. Yeah.
Well, a grifter, I thought it was a more closer. Yeah.
So, anyway, if he gets to be the MP, then he can be nominated, they can do a challenge in amongst the MPs.
Yeah, it'll be between him, Angela Rayner, and
She hasn't said anything yet.
She changed her mind again.
Yeah, nothing's happened yet. There's no official challenge. So, how to get it, you've got to get 80 MPs to sign a letter saying you want a leadership election.
I think the numbers are creeping up.
So I think they're holding off until to see if he gets it, because he's probably their best chance of...
Well, he'd be a litmus test, won't he?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, and he's been a political animal all his life. I think.
But why would anyone want the job? Well, the joke is, even Keir Starmer doesn't want the job.
The UK has got its share of problems, I'm afraid.
Well, it just seems to be lurching for some.
Let's face it, the unequal world, the inequality, you see it in New Zealand, you see it around the world. There's still people sunning themselves in all the resorts and all the elite places in the world. The world's a mess, but it's not a mess for all.
For the elite,
I'm still having a nice life, thank you very much.
Britain's been lurching all over the place for the last 15 years. It's just unbelievable.
Poor governments.
Yeah. What, and I've got one. Can go we go over to America?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, by all means.
By all means. So we've just had the some of the primaries this week, and of course how it works in America is they have to, each party, that mainly the Democrats and the Republicans, because it tends to be an old first-past-the-post system, so it basically it's the two main parties, Democrats or Republicans. So before you're leading up until the midterm elections, they have to choose a candidate for each party. So that's what we're in the process of now. So, and they had quite a few on the weekend, and they had a big one of huge interest in America, and it sort of rippled around the world. They had in Kentucky, they had a Republican primary with this guy, Thomas Massie.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's been causing quite a few waves and ripples amongst establishment Republicans. It's a Republican area.
Causing waves.
Over the Epstein files. Right. He was was behind.
He wanted them to disclose.
Yeah, and he was behind. They disclosed some of them.
Redacted.
Yeah, redacted ones. But he got them. Him and Roe Cano and Taylor Green.
Israel wagon.
And then he also was upset about Trump's war in Iran and over just unconditional support for Israel. And he was and he was a popular. He's been there 12 years or something, maybe 14 years, 12 years. And he got re-elected each time, no problem, with strong majorities. But at this time, they stood a candidate against him. And Trump turned on and said, called him a bum and, bad.
Usual stuff.
Well, anyway, they've just had that by-election.
Yeah.
And, that election, and he's been defeated by this guy, I'm trying to remember his name, who's an ex-SEAL and I looked in the paper before. But anyway, he's been defeated by an establishment candidate who toes the Trump line.
A stick up in other words.
So that's been quite a huge talking point in America because it showed they put $32 million was spent on that election. That's an internal election just to unseat Massie. And Massie got money in return.
Yeah.
But this other guy was very pro-Trump and...
America sounds like...
And got money from the...
America sounds like the
APAC, PR, et cetera.
Yeah. PR company's idea of paradise.
Well, basically, and what they're saying...
They must make so much money.
Well, of course, they're advertising firms and everything else. And they don't... They have a thing that... They don't necessarily have to be true, a lot of their advertising.
True.
it's bizarre. I don't fully understand it, but they can sort of, they can advertise
what
about,
they like and
basically, under the expression,
more
you know.
Controversy, more publicity.
Yeah. So anyway, he didn't just get lose slightly, and the reason why it's sort of shocking, the previous two or three elections he's had, he's been very popular, and he's won... you know, virtually hands down, he hasn't had any serious contenders, and if they he's still beaten them by lots.
But because Trump decided to put the black mark on him.
The APAC and Israeli interests, or when I say pro-Israeli interests, et cetera.
More money coming from...
And this is right, he's a real conservative, don't get me wrong. This is not a left-wing free, he's still a conservative, but he was one of those what you'd call... old-fashioned American, that America first sort of thing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And no wars. What are we doing spending our money overseas
asking
or giving aid?
Questions.
For a Republican, that's turned out to be a death now.
Well, that's treason, isn't it?
So he's lost. So that's huge in the bigger picture for America. But I also think it's not just about the fact that there was so much money spent against him. Kentucky's quite where he is, his part is rural and everything else. Yeah. The population at 56 and above, the age of voters that voted, the turnout doubled compared to the previous elections.
Wow.
So that shows you how big an interest this whole election was. The population that voted for the other candidate, Goldwyn or whatever his name was 56 and above voted hands down basically for Trump's candidate for this guy and not against Massie. Anyone under 56, 55 and under, all the electorates went for their voting percentages. The younger people voted for Massie, which is really interesting. It just shows you. And that's what I'm getting to, is I don't think it's just about the fact that it was so much money spent. It was also about if you know anything about America and their Bible belts and in the they've got this thing about with the Christianity, etc., and they go to church on Sundays, etc. And I think also you're told that if you curse Israel or you say anything bad about Israel or anything else, that sort of threatens your chances at heaven's gate, etc.
Well, see, that reminds me, there's a new MAGA movement in America. Make America godly again.
Yeah. Happened. Yeah.
See it and thinking, what?
And we think surely not, but there was a... Yeah. You've heard of the Bible belts in Kentucky's a bit further up, but the same thing. There's a old people start thinking, oh, you know, I'm not going to... If the pastor says don't knock those people, don't knock those people. So you've got the Trump, then you've got the money, and then you've got the sort of fear, you know, what... The fear next stage, God. Fear of, that sort of thing going on. So it's interesting. The good news in America, just to counter that, over in Minneapolis, which is a big black African-American strong Democratic base, etc., and their leftist candidate of the three that was standing got elected. Guy Rabb, I think his name was Chris first.
I think you said it was Chris Rabb.
Pretty sure that I stand on correction on his first name.
He's more left than most.
He's very much more left.
And he got in.
He's got nominated to be the candidate. And it's almost, it should be a shoo-in because it's a poorer area. It's 50% African-American in the electorate thing. No guarantees. But and it's interesting because the Massey thing has distracted all what you call the right-wing commentators, etc. But this guy, Rab, has a guy called Hassan Piker. And this guy, Hassan Piker, is a tall guy, and he's really upset the Republicans. He's upset the Israeli influence. He's upset the establishment Democrats because he's coming out as quite a strong socialist.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I don't know much about him. So I looked him up and watched a few of his things. And you think, he's very much a populist, but he's actually, he's a good speaker.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And he's quite astute. And he's gone, and so he was helped canvassing for this guy, Rab.
Right.
You know, and amongst the young, he's got a phenomenal support amongst the younger generations. And he's rattling the establishment America. So that was from the left perspective.
That sounds like a younger population in Minneapolis by the sounds of it.
Well, I say it's black and it's also probably a younger population. It's not the rural area. Yeah,
I say when I go back to your messy one, it sounds like the population is predominantly senior citizen-esque.
Well, to flip Massey out of his seat,
you would have to,
That's a big... the turnout doubled.
Yeah.
And where Massey won all the younger votes, but he didn't win... He won most of the younger votes, but that older 55 up just landslided for the Trump candidate. Mm,
money talks, eh?
Yeah. But, so that's what's going on. So America's still having this huge... huge debate about money in politics, about the AIPAC influence, the Israeli influence, and it's a good thing because they needed to, because America has stayed away from the Israel subject for forever.
And but since that poll came out where it's 50-50...
Well, I think Mamdani probably turned the dial or got the dial clicking when he stood up and he did a great job as his candidate, and he's turned out to be, so far, been a very, for New York, doing a good job.
Mm.
But when he turned out and when they all ask him which country you would go to first, when they were doing the mayoralty candidacy and all the other candidates said, I'm going to go to Israel and kiss the wall sort of thing, he said, I'm going to stay in New York because that's who I want to be mayor for. You know, and that made a huge impact on Americans.
So I think Massey was a victim of AIPAC more than anything.
Trump, AIPAC and godliness, I think.
Massey was outspoken over a lot of things.
And they say he did rattle the cage for a Republican. He would question things.
There's primaries in Kentucky and Minnesota, of course, Minneapolis.
Well, there's primaries. Most of them are having primaries because all of Congress is up for grabs, and a third of the Senate.
And I think Trump's fearing that,
Well, definitely, I'm sure the Democrats will win the House. And when I say the Democrats, not all the Democrats, there's quite a few establishment Democrats would be what you'd call a, how would you call it, a relatively right-wing...
almost like fifth columnist.
Almost like a soft national. But so they won't go near foreign policy or thing like that. But they might do a few softer changes, you know, internally with America. And the pressure's on the pressure is on the establishment Democrats. Obviously, they're getting quite a few challenges from what I call more left wing social justice And they're not winning the social justice like the left. They call them the progressive lefts. They're not winning all of them, of course. The establishment Dems are still coming.
Yeah, like to see Schumer go.
Schumer should have been retired ages ago.
Of course he should. Yeah,
Schumer's one of them.
Well, Nancy Pelosi, she's retiring. But, you know, I'm getting old, so I don't want to dish old people, but there are other people can do stuff, you know?
Yeah, my fresh ideas.
Yeah, well, and it's their generation. That's my other point is, they're living it. Hopefully, I'm not out the door too soon. But you know, you can see the gate in the distance. It always makes me laugh. You want to hear a funny story? It's sort of a funny story in my view. But is you go to a funeral. When I was young, I'd see all these old people up the front, and you know, we'd be sitting at the back and running around and told to be sit still, and it was boring and all that. And then a few years later, I got into my 30s, and there's a few young people here, and you know, but there's still lots of old people. And now I go to a funeral,
and you're at the front.
How are these young people? And you can, I've almost got my feet on the wall going, I don't want to go yet.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Fred.
Yeah, it's like a conveyor belt that you can't stop. Which is how life is,
but it is like that. But I think that the Democrats and the Republicans haven't learned that lesson.
No,
there's too many of the old folks still at the front and still dominating.
Yeah, God, I think they're interested. Yeah. It's all about the status quo.
American exceptionalism is, you know, that to anyone else they're narcissistic and they're belligerent and all that. And keep going, you know. And I'm sure they're all not like that.
But no, the ones who actually travel overseas are quite decent.
Well, yeah.
I met lots of Americans in my travels overseas, and they were disparaging about...
They shake their head.
Once they've left the country and they have a look around and talk to other people, this is why we were not popular.
Yeah.
they get a one-sided message while in the States.
Yeah. America, the great.
Yeah, they do. They get that sort of, you know... But that's some sort of supremacy or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my report on America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. So no, interesting times in America, and from a perspective as far as Palestine and the Middle East and that it's great that America's having a huge debate because they haven't had it for years.
The Israeli influence.
Mm. Yeah, and let's face it, Israel's done the bad stuff, but it has been American bombs, it has been American weapons, and it's been more, the worst one from my view is they've provided cover at the UN international diplomacy, so-called at the
so-called
UN,
diplomacy, yeah,
to
yeah.
cover for Israel's actions. You know, every time something comes up at the Security Council, which it does a lot, who vetoes it? On other matters around the world, there's China and Russia does the same.
Yeah.
But on this, you know, when you get most of the countries in the world, apart from a few islands, etc., who've decided that they can't criticise Israel because of the religious thing, countries in the world are saying this is not right, and then America comes up and goes, no, sorry, we're vetoing that.
That's the thing. Always been my criticism. There should be no permanent members on the Security Council, and that veto vote should go.
Yeah,
those are the two things.
Yeah,
but they won't.
Because lots of things would have been passed if there wasn't a Security Council.
Security Council and the veto.
Number of times the General Assembly in vast majorities have voted on issues. This shouldn't happen. That should happen. Whatever.
Yeah,
and it doesn't carry any weight.
Yeah.
No legal bearing at all.
Yeah. Resolutions on Israel, resolutions on the blockade of Cuba.
Cuba.
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just blocked.
Well, look at the tragedy on about Cuba. You know, bad enough the awfulness that's happened to the Arab people and that around Israel, etc. Mm. But look, Cuba is another story. Whereas Cuba, it's like the Americans haven't got over the Bay of Pigs. Yeah. They haven't got over the fact that a movement formed and pushed out the capitalist. Yeah, and it was a ruthless top capitalist system too.
But these are just cruel. Yeah, we know that. Yeah,
Okay, Castro and who's the other guy? Che Guevara and all that formed, and they won it. Okay.
Yeah, and then the Bay of Pigs and all that stuff.
Bay of Pigs. The Americans tried to get it back, and of course, it wasn't popular, and they stuffed up the.
And it was too close. The military operation. Too close. Yeah, they didn't like it.
And then
close.
We had the Cuban Missile Crisis and all that. But they still haven't let it go. To me, that's just tragic.
And they keep telling the American public, see, it's a failed state. It's a failed state because of the sanctions they put on it.
Yeah, of course.
They've just used up the last of the oil that Russia sent to them, and now hospitals can't, generators can't work, people haven't got transportation, food. It just goes on and on.
Yeah, and we're relying on Venezuela, but of course...
Well, that's been scuppered.
That's been scuppered, and we don't quite know the insider story of all that, but Venezuela was supplying Cuba with oil. But of course... Now they're not, which I can't quite understand because I sort of said, okay, they've got rid of the so-called bad guy, which I don't think he was, but okay, they've got rid of Maduro. And what's the new president's name?
She was
in the same party, but I quite don't know.
She wasn't the zealot, was she? The one who wanted...
No, she wasn't the one who wanted Netanyahu to bomb her fellow people.
Machado.
She was the Nobel Prize. She's the Nobel Prize winner.
Yeah. Machado, wasn't it?
Don't ask me.
But it's been definitely quiet. It's like it slipped off the radar.
But they're not giving oil to Cuba. So that same party has obviously even done a deal with Uncle Sam.
And now it's the Yanks are stealing the oil.
Yeah. Well, they're appropriating the oil, and there'll be suitcases of money going to appropriate people.
It's called stealing.
And watch the space on that one. But Cuba, go back to Cuba. It's awful that a country that's independent and et cetera, and America's done everything it can to collapse that system.
Yeah.
Everything it can, and it's still doing it. And as I say, we talked about before we come in here, unfortunately, Florida's full of ex Latin Americans that tend to have some money, so they have an undue influence over politics in America.
And
they just want Cuba back so they can retake their plantations and their land, I imagine, because that's years ago, but they're still hanging on to that dream. A bit like the Iranians. The people going on around the world, get the Iranian regime. Is it because they really care about the Iranian people or they want their lands back?
I think it's the latter. Mm. They've been crying it for years.
And there's lots of examples of it.
Yeah.
All over the planet.
Yeah. And in history, in millennia.
Yeah. The rich always move their assets and want to get back in again.
It's usually the peasant that does the dying, you know.
And has the
misery. Yeah, yeah.
But they don't count, though, do they? The leagues don't think anything of them.
Unless there's a war and they suddenly need them.
They have their uses.
Collateral damage.
You got a Russian peasant or a Ukrainian peasant.
If it's not
they're
war,
useful.
They're useful as customers to make me rich.
Make my bombs.
What do you got, Craig?
Well, just one thing. I know we're running out of time, but it comes back to some of the stuff that Mick talked about the accommodation supplement.
Mm.
And there was that comment made about politicians who receive
here in New Zealand.
Accommodation supplement for staying in Wellington.
Mm.
And they had a dig at Louise Upston about the accommodation supplement that she receives.
It goes to it,
per annum, it's a lot of money.
It's $1,000 a week or something.
It's accommodation supplement for them, but not for anyone else.
Yes.
For me, but not for thee, comes to mind.
Do as I say, not as I do.
For the few, not the many,
she was leaving the house and a question was fired at her and she just kept on going.
So that perception of entitlement, I suppose.
So self-entitlement. And they've had this issue before with English and the accommodation supplement. I remember all that sort of stuff.
And what I can't get out is, why are they claiming it? If they're wealthy anyway, why are they claiming it? Just because they're entitled to it?
That's the only reason they need.
Yeah. So they're not doing anything illegal. Don't get me wrong.
It's just all perfectly legal.
The morality of it.
It comes back to my comment last week about the broadcasting allocation, and you get all these donations.
Yeah.
Why should you have it when you have all this other money?
Mm.
Yeah. There should be a threshold, like they have in working income. Okay.
Or should she just be in a one-bedroom apartment?
Yeah.
Or sharing it with Winston and David, I suppose.
Bunk beds. I think David and Winston might live together.
Bunk buddies.
Yeah.
Okay, we're out of here. You can check us out on our podcast and on www.freefm.org.nz.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.